Blog Talk Radio.
Wednesday, July 23rd, 2015, episode 50 guy. Oh, hey, there's... All right. Anyway, thank you, Biggie Smalls, for the music. It's Wednesday, July 23rd, 2015, 25th. This is episode 55 of the Hockey Guys podcast. Brought to you by Just Dish and Hockey. Hockey lifestyle apparel. You can get hats, clothes. They're very nice. Sunglasses. Go check it out at justdish.com. My co-host, Chris Shannon. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I feel like Biggie Smalls does that to us almost every other episode. He'll wait and that for his moment, and he'll come when you start talking. So, you know, but it's a great song. We love that intro. So I think we have to keep him.
Very intimidating. He's a very intimidating figure. I know he's been dead for like pretty much our entire lifetime, but even in postmortem, he scares the heck out of me.
Maybe he's hiding with Tupac, because I think they're both alive, right? Isn't that true? Isn't that the conspiracy?
Well, Tupac's totally alive. I mean, the evidence suggests that he's alive. There's no way he got killed the night of that. There's no way he got killed the night of that Mike Tyson fight. Not a chance.
Yeah.
Not a chance.
No.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we should eventually talk about hockey. As this is the Hockey Guys podcast. Our guest today is Andrew Berkshire. Andrew is the managing editor and social media coordinator at SportLogic, a analytical data research company. Actually, a very fascinating guy. He's been one of the prominent voices in the hockey blogger community. You may recognize Andrew from Eyes on the Prize, the Montreal Canadiens chapter of SB Nation. He was pretty much the king, the head cheese. I don't know what term we could use, but that's pretty much what he was. And now he's moved on to SportLogic. He's going to come on. We'll talk some analytics, how he started to get into it. We've talked about it on the show before. I love the relationship between the blogosphere and analytics in general, and how it almost became mainstream through these like Twitter all-stars, just these guys who had nothing else but to create spreadsheets. But we're going to talk to him about that. And we'll talk a little bit of Montreal Canadiens too, how they've been doing this offseason, what to expect for them in the upcoming year, how much they really are going to rely on Carey Price again, as you and I both know. But, Chris, the dog days of summer. Not much is really going on. We were talking about it before the show. Braden Holtby's in the middle of his negotiation. The NHL announced that Las Vegas and Quebec City are the two teams that applied for expansion. Where do you want to start off?
I think we need to talk about where we think he'll end up, because I mean, I think that he was trying to get around $8 million, and people were freaking out all around Twitter when they heard that news. But I mean, that's what you do when you're negotiating. That's why it's called negotiating. They're going to negotiate, and they'll probably fall off at a number around 6.2 or 6.6. That's where Carey Price is around. I mean, it's a little bit less than Henrik Lundqvist, and that's what he deserves. I mean, if the guy's making $6 million as a goaltender, I think that's a great starting point. And, you know, Braden Holtby's a great goalie. He really reminds me of Carey Price. You know, he's not better, but the way he plays mostly, his positioning and all that. So I think we've seen last year especially that he can be that number one consistent, strong goaltender and top 10 goalie in the NHL, maybe top five. You know, he actually has fought a lot of adversity throughout his NHL career so far. You know, he's fighting with Norgberg a couple of years ago to get that number one spot. He fought with Varlamov. You know, he's fought through with a lot of guys trying to get that number one position. He's finally got it. And I really think he'll end up with a 6.2. But it's really interesting, this arbitration case, because, I mean, when you have a goaltender in arbitration, and arbitration does get ugly. It does. I mean, we've seen players and teams we've seen them really get severe. And who knows? I mean, if Holtby's serious that he wants $8 million and he wants Henrik Lundqvist money, then I don't think Washington's going to be too happy about that. And when you have an arbitration case that gets ugly with your goaltender and your number one goaltender and future goaltender, you have a lot of things to get ready for this coming season, because that locker room is going to be filled with lots of hatred towards that goaltender, and that goaltender is going to have a lot of hatred towards that management group.
Earlier this morning, I read Ryan Lambert from Puck Daddy. He had an article on the upcoming arbitration case, and he talked about how if you look at Holtby's numbers at this stage in his career, when you just Let's look at 5-on-5 alone, because I think when it comes to goaltenders, I think that people have been trying to find like the analytics for goalies, but I think it's a position where really the only thing that you can look at is their 5-on-5. Because when you have a goalie who gives up goals when his team's shorthanded, well, that's almost expected. But when you look at just 5-on-5 alone, he ranks 5th out of 39 goalies who at the age of 24, or he ranks 5th in 5-on-5 save percentage out of 39 goalies who have played as much as him by his age. And that's the thing, like, we've talked about this with goalies. They take a while to develop. I mean, a lot of people think defensemen take a while and you don't really know what you got until his mid-20s, but some goalies don't become who they are until their late 20s or early 30s. It's not completely out of the realm to see these guys go through the ECHL. And Holtby, for the most part, you have to give the guy credit. I mean, the fact that he's been consistently not just above average, but a very good goaltender. His save percentage has been in the 920s consistently. Like, if you look at the numbers alone, he's right up there amongst the best goalies in the league. And obviously, we look at the names like Lundqvist and Rask and so on. But I think we're starting to enter a point where Washington now knows they have good goaltending. And when it comes to the negotiation, obviously, the two sides are going to have a North and South pole when it comes to figures, because the team wants to shortchange their guy, and obviously the player's agent wants to overinflate his value. So I don't think Braden Holtby's really looking for $8 million when he says $8 million, but I think that he wants some of that. He wants a number that justifies that, hey, I'm an elite NHL goaltender. I was a big reason why your team found success. In fact, in that series against the Islanders, except for a game or two, both him and Jaroslav Halak were incredible. And we were bearing witness to a goaltender that we're starting to see enter his prime. And I think that, like, he's already past where a lot of people put Jonathan Bernier at that point. He's already at a stage for a goalie that we don't see for a while. And he's been incredible. And I think that now you have a coach in Barry Trotz who he teaches a defensive system, so now you've got a goalie secured in that. And I understand that it's negotiating. I know I'm ramaging on, and I know that it's a back and forth. And like you said, arbitration gets ugly, because there's nothing more ugly than a team trying to prove to an arbitrator, our player that we've drafted, developed, and gotten to know as a person, he's not worth what he says. So you're pretty much shutting down whatever that player is trying to argue. I'll let you take it over. But I think that it's an interesting case where if I'm an arbitrator, I'm going to lead towards Holtby, and I think Holtby's number is going to be north of 7. I think he's going to end up with at least 7.
Yeah, I mean, that's a bigger number, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he's a good goaltender, and this is what the market is going to be for goaltenders now. I mean, the cap's going up. People are realizing more and more that if you have a number one goaltender and can play those number one minutes, play 60 to 70 games in a season, he's going to be worth the big money. You know, but I look at that Washington team. That is a stacked team. I mean, I love their moves this offseason. You know, TJ Oshie with Nicholas Backstrom or with Kuznetsov. I mean, that's a great addition. And they got him for a nice price. I mean, Troy Brouwer, good player. He's a good role player. But, you know, he's nothing like a – he's more of a third-line guy. You know, they did lose Joel Ward. They lost Brouwer. But I'm still – this team, you know, they lost Mike Green as well. But they still have a solid team. They're for sure going to be a contender for the Eastern Conference lead because, I mean, there's so many teams going to be fighting for that spot, you know. I really do think it will be up between Pittsburgh – well, I don't think. I think I know it will be either Pittsburgh and Washington for the Eastern Conference lead this year. And, you know, I think we'll go back to the old, like – well, not old, but like 3 or 4 years ago, and it was either Pittsburgh or Washington that would get those two or be the best team in the Eastern Conference. And I really think we'll go back to that because I really do see, like, you know, Pittsburgh, they've got Kessel, you know, they've got Crosby, they've got Malkin, they have Letang. They've got players that will play great on their third line. Their fourth line, it's going to be very questionable. They're going to have a lot of AHLers on that line because they can't work with their cap. Their defense, absolutely young. I mean, they're really going to have to step up these defensemen. In Washington, like I said, I mean, I really do think they're going to be a good team this year. And Braden Holtby, what we saw from last year, I mean, if he can do one step above what he did last year, he'll be on that top 3, top 5 goaltending list. So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting where he ends up. I agree. 7 million. If I'm Washington, I'm trying to stay away from that. I think, you're overpaying for a goalie right now from what you've seen. His potential, for sure, he can be a $7 million goalie. We've seen that. But, I think you try to go get around that 6 million, get near the Carey Price number. And I think that's a good target number. And you can easily put that with an arbitrator saying, you know what, you're telling me my goaltender is better than Carey Price, or, let's get around to they're similar goaltenders. And it must be hard for managers too, saying, like, who've developed these players, who've made these players great, to say, yeah, talk about all the flaws in front of the guy. I mean, we've seen so many issues with that. It's got to be hard to, as a general manager, to actually talk bad about your team.
Do you think, because we've seen an influx of young players locking up long term instead of taking a bridge contract, do you think Holtby's case, like, if you're Washington, would you pay him more money on a shorter term? Or if you're Holtby already, like I said, I think he's 24, are you already looking for that long term 6, 7, 8 year deal right now?
If you're Holtby, you're looking for that long term, and you want to stay in Washington. You see this good core, and you've been developed there. You're turning into their star number one goalie. You want to be there. I mean, you're going to make good money. You know that. You're not going to make anything less than five. You'll be at the 6 or 7 mark. You got to be happy with this team. He's been good with them. I really do think that Braden Holtby will stay with the Washington Capitals, and it'll be around a long term deal, like 6 to 7 years. And I think, if you're Washington, why are you hesitant about that? I mean, you got a number one goalie who's 24 years old, hasn't even hit his prime of his career. Load him up. I mean, give him as many years as you can give him. I mean, I'm not saying give him Roberto Luongo numbers, but I'm saying give him some big contract term, because, I mean, this guy's 24 years old and he hasn't hit his prime, and he's going to. And what we've seen, his prime may be one of the best goaltenders in the next 6 years.
I just saw this on Twitter, some breaking news here on the Hockey Guys podcast, brought to you by Just Vision Hockey. Lou Lamoriello resigns as president of the New Jersey Devils. Chris, your initial thought?
Wow. Yeah, I just saw that too. That's kind of crazy. I mean, he just went as the team president this year, and I wonder if there was some bad blood between him and Chiro, and he just saw that it wasn't going to work out. As a New Jersey fan, if you've got to be, I mean, that's pretty much your hero of of your team. I mean, he's been there since the beginning. He's brought in some of the most amazing players to that team. Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, Lou is one of the best general managers. He did it different than anyone else, and one of the most unique general managers, that is for sure. And he left with a bang. He's left his team with a number one goalie in Corey Schneider. They do have a huge rebuild to go through.
I wonder if there's been some conflict in which, like, the initial reason Lamoriello went out and hired Chiro as GM. A lot of people were speculating that it could be because maybe Lou's spent a little too much time there. Maybe ownership wanted to go in a different direction. And it seemed like he was going to go to the side and have more of a consulting role.
Oh
But
my God, dude. Dude, Lou Lamoriello,
what?
general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, really? Oh, my God.
Wow. I just saw that. Wow. That is
Oh my
crazy.
God, you weren't kidding. Oh my
I
God, we
thought,
have breaking news.
yeah. And I saw that. I was like, oh, this is a hoax. Like, I totally thought that was a fake account.
Are
And it's
you?
the Toronto Maple Leafs. Wow.
I'm trying so hard not to swear right now. Oh my God, are you kidding me?
I don't really understand that move, to be honest. First initial thoughts, Kyle Dubas, who's done an amazing job with Toronto. That's really surprising me. I don't know why they would go with a veteran guy like that. And man, in Toronto, you guys are not going to get any news about players. So I'm going to tell you that. I mean, this guy is so quiet with everything. Oof, wow.
Well, it already seemed like they were. It already seemed like under the new management of Shanahan and Dubas and Hunter that there's no leaks. It almost, you know what I mean? It almost seems like nothing gets to the media. I remember when Nonis was the general manager, there was obviously the connection with Darren Dreger from TSN being his cousin, so it always seemed like he was the leak, and any news that came from Leafs front office would get to Dreger. But wow. And as if you're just joining us right now on the Hockey Guys podcast, some breaking news. The Toronto Maple Leafs have named Lou Lamoriello general manager of the hockey club. A lot of people were speculating that maybe the Leafs wouldn't hire a general manager. They would be content with a figure out of Dubas and Hunter and Shanahan, and it seemed like Shanahan was the de facto GM during this offseason, but wow. Like, wow. I'm utterly speechless. I really
don't understand that move, to be honest, and I don't know if you like it or what. I mean, I know I'm just speaking off my gut here because this is what I've just seen. But you get a guy who, I mean, getting older, you have maybe he's going to mentor Kyle Dubas, but you have a guy like Kyle Dubas there. You have Hunter there. You've got Shanahan, who I really think has said, you know what, I don't want to be part of the hockey operations as much as I have been. I think we've seen that in some of his press conferences and that he said that he kind of wants to stay away from that. But it's kind of weird how it came out just all at once that, you know, New Jersey has taken away Art Lou-Lamoriello, left New Jersey and then came right to Toronto. I mean, you'd think he'd wait a little bit, but Lou-Lamoriello is now the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And this is going to be I want to see what he's going to do with this rebuild, if he's still on page with a real rebuild. And guess what? The dog days of summer has ended for the Toronto Maple Leafs fans, because in the next week you will have lots of stuff to talk about. I know that.
As we always do here on the Hockey Guys podcast. Going back, or continuing on, and we're still expecting our guest Andrew Berkshire to come on in the next, I'm guessing, 5 minutes. Now, before we get to him, further up on Lou, there were a lot of decisions that I can't not do my Lou Lamoriello impression now. All I want to talk about is high-character two-way forwards who are going to be a great part of our organization, and we got nothing but quality individuals within our realm. Chris, this is reminiscent of when thank you. This is reminiscent of when David Clarkson got traded to Columbus about 3 minutes before we went on the air doing our show. This is we really get lucky with the breaking news here.
We do, and I think we had a signing last show for with a Leafs. Who was it? Last show we had a signing with the Leafs. So I mean, we get news from the Leafs every time we have a show. It's kind of crazy that this happens. But you know what? It's for you, Hunter. Because if it was the Montreal Canadiens doing something, I would be freaking out because I am just waiting for something.
Wow, I'm still in shock that I don't understand that Lou Lamoriello. I wonder what the connection is. Like, it must have been like, because I know Shanahan played for, the Devils, and I'm sure that him and Lamoriello have talked at some point. But I'm just trying to figure out, like, where did this come from? I don't understand the. Oh, and it seems that we've lost Chris, and he'll come back on soon as we also wait for Mr. Berkshire. Folks, I really don't know what to make of this decision. Lou Lamoriello, for a long time, struggled with the New Jersey Devils lately. That team has been, to say the least, in the last few years, not good. A lot of people feel that he was a little too loyal to Marty Brodeur and gave him a few too many starts a few years ago. I'm just trying to process this now as I scroll through my timeline on Twitter and as Chris is back on. Chris, again, back to you before Andrew comes back on, or until we have Andrew come in. Again, more initial reaction on Lou Lamoriello. What does this move do now in terms of, like, what does Lou bring to the table that you didn't have from Mark Hunter or Kyle Dubas? Because it seemed like Mark Hunter was the old school hockey guy who is a genius scout, and Dubas was the new wave of analytics who it seemed like a modern thinker. And you can't get more old school than Lou Lamoriello. Lou Lamoriello probably would tape the goaltenders to the net in practice to make them stay in the crease. I mean, this guy is old effing school. And now he's the general manager of a hockey club that every other indication suggests is entering the 21st century.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it really brings good reputation to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I mean, everyone respects Lou Lam. He's probably going to be going down this, you know, and we saw that he was president. I was saying he'll probably go down as one of the best general managers. And I mean, he's the best general manager in New Jersey's history, probably even their only, but I mean, he will go down as that. He'll be as one of the best general managers in the NHL. I have a lot of respect for Lou. I think what he does as a general manager, you know, I really respect that he can keep everything so quiet. The trades he pulls off, you know, he stole Corey Schneider from the Vancouver Canucks. He's had the great days with Kovalchuk and Parise and Henrique. You know, they were at the Cup Finals just a couple years ago. They had Martin Brodeur. You know, they had that great organization that every year they were a solid, good team. They played by the way they always played. You know, they had their way of playing, their defensive style, their trap, you know. I think it really is that him coming in there for a couple years to mentor Kyle Dubas, get him to be that next big thing, get him to be that general manager that'll be there like Lou Lamoriello with the Toronto Maple Leafs for the next 20 years, and that can help, you know, get this rebuild going. And I do think Lou Lamoriello, I mean, if you're going to hire a guy, he's got all this experience, he has the experience to teach these guys what's happening and to make sure that everyone slows down with this rebuild. I mean, this is kind of like a dream team looking management team on the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I mean, that's great and all, but it doesn't mean anything until you do something on the ice. So hopefully Lou Lamoriello can do something there. And Lula, it's weird though. I'm thinking about this now, you know, he went from a rebuild to a rebuild. And, you know, I'd say Toronto is on a better path to a rebuild than New Jersey so far. You know, New Jersey just kind of started the rebuild and they're kind of in an awkward position right now. And while the Toronto Maple Leafs have gone full out, we're rebuilding, we're going to be all youth, and I like what the Toronto Maple Leafs are doing more than the New Jersey Devils, to be honest, right now. But yeah, I'm kind of a little speechless as well.
We'll get back to that, I'm sure, in a bit. But joining us on the line right now is a man who is the managing editor and social media coordinator at Sport Logic. But you may remember him as the King Honcho, formerly at Eyes on the Prize, the Montreal Canadiens chapter of SB Nation, Andrew Berkshire. Mr. Berkshire, thank you for coming on the Hockey Guys podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, you guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. We're just, me and Chris are giving our instant reaction. We just saw Twitter as the news on Lou Lamoriello as the new general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll obviously get into analytics and the Habs and everything in that sort, but just quick, your instant reaction to Mr. Lou coming in to the blue and white.
It doesn't really make much sense to me. It doesn't fit with what the Leafs have been doing. I mean, if you watch the New Jersey Devils the last couple of seasons, Lamoriello's kind of been running that into the ground, and he seems to have this huge penchant for old players and over-the-hill players, whereas the Leafs are going super young. So I really don't see the match there. I guess it's just bringing in a guy with a lot of clout to be a figurehead, but it seemed like they were doing a fine job without him, so I don't get it.
It's weird. I'll cut in, and then Chris, you can go. It's weird, though, like you mentioned. This is the first Maple, like, I've covered this team for a long time, and this is the first offseason that I've actually been like, hey, that's a smart move, or hey, that's not a bad idea. Like, this entire offseason, they were able to unload Kessel, and whether or not you thought Kessel deserved to be traded or whatever, they got rid of him. They've signed a lot of guys to one-year contracts, which are the safe, no-risk, high-reward moves, and they drafted quite well. But like you said, this is completely out of left field. I have no idea. I'm really interested to hear the logic behind this. I'm sure we'll get a Brendan Shanahan media availability either today or tomorrow. But Chris, you can go on. But like, still, wow. I'm still in shock. Like, wow.
Yeah, Andrew, I was thinking a similar thing. You know, I don't know why he's going to be there. You know, he went from a rebuild to another rebuild. Maybe it's mentoring Kyle Dubas. I don't think Kyle Dubas needs the godfather to teach him what to do. You know, he's done pretty good so far. But, you know, as a Leafs fan for Hunter, I know Hunter's right now in utter shock right now because this is his team, and that was just totally out of left field, like you said. What can they expect from Lou? I mean, do you think he'll be a good general manager to actually help him out in that rebuild, or do you think he may mess this up and really try to hurry everything going, getting everything to go faster than it actually was going to?
The amount of trust that Shanahan has put in Dubas and Hunter so far, I can't see him, you know, doing a 180 out of nowhere and taking that away. So I highly doubt that they're just going to, you know, panic and go with Lamoriello's vision instead. I'm sure it was clear when he came aboard that, you know, like, this is your team in a transition kind of thing. And, you know, remember, Lamoriello retired from being a general manager in New Jersey earlier this year. It seems like he isn't interested in doing the full job. So it could be just, you know, helping two younger guys learn the extreme intricacies of the business or whatever, and showing them how to muscle people out and join the mob. But, you know, I just don't see the point at this moment, because it seems like, based on all the things that Dubas and Hunter have done, they know what they're doing. They seem to be two really smart guys. And I actually kind of wish that the Leafs would have not named a general manager and gone with this, like, tandem team that would have been a new thing in the NHL, kind of led by Shanahan, because it was cool and interesting, and it seemed like it was working really well. And you look at the contracts that the Maple Leafs signed, and it looks like whoever was signing those contracts, I believe it was Dubas, was a really good negotiator, and he seemed to find diamonds in the rough fairly consistently. So I just don't know what to think of it right now. I guess, well, it's one of those wait-and-see situations, and I don't get to have a spicy hot take opinion.
don't worry. We'll have plenty of that. Okay. I guess, like, my last thing on Lamoriello, and then we'll talk about other stuff, but the only thing I really see is that so much of the media was making a big deal of, well, you need a face for the team to be the general manager. And I laughed that there was a media availability that Shanahan had where he was like, well, what's wrong with just not having a GM? Well, like, why can't we just have a bunch of guys do the job? Like, why does the media need a face to put in that position? But I guess the only thing I can really get from this hiring is that it's an outlet to the rest of the league, where obviously people know Lamoriello's connections within the league. He's been a major part of several lockouts, and he's obviously, like, I don't know, actually. I can't even put into words. Like, I don't understand this hiring. There's got to be something else to it. Like I really can't quantify what they're doing. And we live in an era where we quantify nearly everything. As that's my segue into my actual first question of this interview. But whatever. I can't even think about Lou Lamoriello right now. Andrew, my first question for you. I know you've done extensive work with analytics. The company you're with right now, in SportLogic, they do a lot of data research. The thing that's always fascinated me, and I talked to Chris about this at the beginning of the show, is the relationship between the hockey blogosphere and Twitter with analytics. And it seems that that's how analytics became mainstream. What were your first initial toes in the water, so to speak, when it came to, I guess, Corsi and the things that are we all know nowadays? But how did you first start getting into it?
Actually, it was through writing. And I wrote an article when I first joined EOTP. And basically, a couple people came into the article, and they were like, hey, you're stupid. And I was like, whoa. Don't call me stupid. What do you mean? And they brought all this stuff up, and I was like, well, that's interesting. I'm going to look into that. And then I ended up looking into it, and it explained a lot of things about the game to me, and it was very intuitive. And I just dove in head first, and, you know, the rest is history. Eventually, I ended up being named managing editor of the site, built it from, you know, about 80,000 page views a month to 1.5 million. And now I got this job.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. And, you're one of the best Twitter guys out there. You know, I love following you. I love your articles. You write great things. And you're not just one of those guys that says consistent things. You go out of the way, your way, and just get info that no one else has. I mean, I love what you had on Habs Eyes on the Prize, you know, your podcast with Connor McKenna. You know, I'm a fan of TSN 690, so I love listening to more of those guys. You're just a big figurehead for this new wave of analytics, I think, especially on Twitter. But this Sports Logic company, you know, I heard a little bit about it, I think, with Christopher Boucher, who was interviewed by Mitch Melnick near the draft. And I think he was talking about Sports Logic. And I heard that, and I thought, wow, this is going to be amazing. I mean, this is going to be revolutionary. Can you explain to the listeners what this is about and what Sports Logic will do to the sport of hockey?
Yeah, okay. So essentially, what Chris Boucher is in Sport Logic is the guy who manages what exactly we're going to be tracking. So if you're familiar with Chris Boucher and his site, Boucher Scouting, for years he's been tracking microstat data, which is basically every event that happens on the ice. If there's a stick check, he records who did the stick check, who it was against, whether it was successful or not, and if it was successful, who picked up the loose puck, was there a change of possession, all this stuff, it's tracked. Now, what SportLogic does is instead of having a person track that, they use broadcast video and motion sensing technology to automatically track statistics straight off of video live. Now, right now it's very expensive and we're still working on the technology, but it is honestly astonishing what this can do. And essentially right now we have about 94 different statistics that give us about 12,000 events every single game. And, you know, you put this all together, eventually we're going to have full season's worth of data on every player in the NHL. And you can actually compare them directly based on their skill set, their successful and unsuccessful everything. Like, you can see players who hit a lot. Are they actually good hitters? Do they actually promote a change in possession? Or are they just hitting guys just to hit guys to make it, you know, a good stat line? Are players who shoot a lot actually good shooters? Are they shooting from good areas? We'll know that. It has shot location. It has shot speed, player speed, everything. We could tell you essentially everything there is to know about a player. And for once, you actually wouldn't have to watch the games.
All right. I drafted Brendan Shanahan in 1987 as part of sorry, we do a lot of bad impressions on the show. I'm sorry, Andrew. thank you. Quick question. Sorry, I'm so distracted by Twitter. My inner Leaf fandom is bursting. Quick question. Where did Andrew Jerkshire come from? Because I always hear Steve Dangle call you that, friend of the show. How did that come about? Why does he call you Jerkshire?
Okay, so that nickname originally came about from a friend of mine here in Montreal who now lives in Fort Lauderdale, Chris Blenar, who's a professor at Nova University down there, biology. And we were joking around, and I have a habit of being very blunt, and online it comes off as being a jerk. And when I used a comment on a site called Habs Inside Out, now called Hockey Inside Out, a lot of people there didn't like me. And I met Chris through that site, and he started calling me Jerkshire. And that kind of turned into, you know, it stayed with me on EOTP. And then when I moved on to Twitter, people started picking it up there. And then Dangle picked it up as well. So it's kind of like followed me around, and it's, you know, infamous.
Well, only cool people have nicknames and stuff, so you're a lucky guy.
This is true.
Yeah. And, you know, I know Hunter, he's very obsessed with his Leafs and that, but I'm really interested in SportLogic. I think, you know, I've read all your articles with it. I think this is going to be, like, revolutionary to the game. Have you talked to any teams about this, about your products? I can't see teams not being interested in this thing. I mean, this is just a tracking device and get more and more info, which must be what teams are looking for.
We've talked to teams. I can't say who, but I think we're right now working with 6 or 7 different teams. And I actually have a meeting today at 2 with the team.
Montreal Canadiens. Mark Richman's done it.
I can't say.
Go Habs, go. Wow. Talk about your time at Eyes on the Prize, because I feel like that, as well as Pension Plan Puppets, it seems like SB Nation and the sort of fan blogs, that's really become now almost the new voice of sports fans. Like, before, we had to wait for Steve Simmons' article every Sunday or listen to whatever gold Bruce Arthur produced. But now we have the ability to just go on Twitter and read some really high-quality stuff, and not just analytical stuff, but really, you know, like, well-thought-out opinion pieces on these, like, sports blogs. How did you get into Eyes on the Prize, and what is your thought on, I guess, in general, SB Nation and the idea of now fans taking over as the voice of sports media?
I got onto SB Nation simply the guy who used to manage Eyes on the Prize, the guy who founded it, found my like WordPress blog and asked me to join up. And I was like, oh, whatever, sure. It's instant page views for my work, right? So I thought, why not give myself a bigger platform? Wasn't making any money anyway, so going onto this bigger platform made sense. And that's something that SB Nation takes advantage of, is they have this platform that, you know, when you post an article on SB Nation, it goes to Yahoo. You have all sorts of LinkedIns from different sites. You're set up really well. You have a great editorial platform. You have access to Getty Images, USA Today Images. It's quite the robust thing. So it's a pleasure to write for them. And if you get to the point where you're managing a site, you also get paid. So that's a nice little tip in the cap, or whatever you want to call it. Now, I don't know how long it took for SB Nation to become what it is today, but you're right. It kind of is the standard bearer for blogging now. And, you know, it is the voice of the fan, which is a lot more analytical than media right now. So I think it's a good thing that fans are doing more and are more involved in creating media narrative and everything, and analyzing plays and learning more about the game. However, I do think that eventually SB Nation is going to have to change their platform a little bit and pay most, if not all, of their writers, because there is a bit of a groundswell going on in that they're a little bit exploitative. And, you know, I always felt bad when I was the manager that, you know, we had a woman there who did copy editing for almost every single piece, never got paid. We had people who wrote, you know, a game preview 82 times a year, never got paid. People who wrote game threads 82 times, 3 times a year, you know, and never got paid. And you feel bad for that, because this person's doing a hell of a lot of work. So I think eventually that's going to have to change, and the money's going to have to come back to everyone and be split more evenly instead of straight to the company.
We're going all over the field here, Andrew, but I mean, there's so much to talk about. And I kind of want to move over to the Habs right now. You know, the Habs are kind of, you know, there's a lot going on right now. I mean, well, not much that we're seeing as fans, but I guarantee that we're seeing a lot. I mean, Mark Bergevin is doing a lot right now. You know, he has a lot of things going on in the power play. You know, he's hired Matty Pfeiffer, a friend of the show, who's the consultant to the Habs. Yeah, he's a good friend of ours, so we're happy he got that job, and we hope that he can actually get over that consultant role and maybe get in a real role with that team, and that analytics can get a little bit more predominant that we know of. I mean, you know, maybe we don't know. Maybe it's a bigger role than we actually think it is in the Montreal Canadiens organization. But I think the big question is right now with Montreal Canadiens is the defense. You know, they have, I think, 9 defensemen that should be playing in the regular, on the first opening game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And what do you think happens with those guys? I mean, you know, we've got Gilbert, we've got Emlyn, we've got Chinnordy, Patterson, and Beaulieu. They're all fighting for those last two or three spots. What do you think happens? And do you think that we'll see a trade, or do you think it's more of players are just going to have to wait their turns?
I think you're definitely going to see a trade. And don't forget about Mark Barbario either, who's a very good player that they signed from Tampa Bay. I think that you're going to end up seeing either Tom Gilbert or Jared Tenorti traded, simply because Alexi Emelin is too difficult to move, both because his reputation around the league is not great, and he has a no-trade clause, which is basically unlimited until next year. So it's going to be – I think you'd be a little bit delusional to think that Emelin's on his way out, even though I think he is the worst player in that group. I like Tom Gilbert. He's a versatile guy, but he's also on, you know, the wrong side of 30. Fairly cheap contract, so easy to move. And I would really not want them to trade Jared Tenorti, but I could see it happening simply because they can't send him to the AHL. And if he can't play, what's the point? You know, you have to get an asset back somehow. So I could end up seeing something similar to what the Canadiens did with Danny Christo, where they trade him for another prospect who's about similar in talent but 2 years younger, so they can stash him in the AHL for a little bit longer.
What were your thoughts on Brandon Prust, who was just recently traded to Vancouver? Now you get Zach Cassian, who was a guy who was drafted in the first round, I think was taken in the middle of the Lucic frenzy when everyone wanted that power forward, and now he's on his way to Montreal. But what were your thoughts on Prust, who I think in a lot of ways, while he does get in a lot of fights and he is a bit of a penalty minutes guy, I always saw as sort of a kind of the modern enforcer, where a guy who wasn't just some heavyweight goon, a guy who could actually play some minutes and contribute in some ways. What were your thoughts on him as now he heads to Vancouver?
I think Brandon Press was a very, very good player who would be a lot better if he didn't fight. The fighting thing has led to a lot of injuries, especially in his shoulders the last few seasons, and that really cut his time in Montreal short. And he also needed to rein in his temper. I think one of the main reasons why Brandon Press was traded was because of what happened last playoffs with the referee there, where he spazzed out and called him out. If you notice that the Canadians usually, when a player does something crazy, stand behind them and, you know, at least have some sort of excuse for why it happened. Not so that time with Brandon Press. They completely abandoned him, didn't say a word, and then the next day he came out with his tail between his legs apologizing for it. And that was the writing on the wall for me, that he was out of town. But I think Brandon Press is a very good player. He's declining. He's getting older. He's a lot slower than he used to be skating-wise. Probably not going to produce much offense, but defensively, he's great. He has great hockey sense. When he gets the puck, he's extremely efficient with it, getting it out of the zone. Very good player. Probably not worth $2.5 million, but, you know, good enough that you can swallow that.
Did you ever catch any of Hockey Wives?
No, I didn't. I saw, like, highlights and stuff that came across Twitter, but I heard that his relationship with Mary Permorin was a little bit rocky and might have not survived him being traded or something like that, but I guess they got engaged this summer, so it's all good.
I was going to say you're not missing much. Yeah, I love how he gets traded right after he gets engaged to his girlfriend who's from Montreal. So
Think that was a coincidence, to be honest. I think he knew it was coming, so may as well lock that down, right?
Might as well.
Yeah. Sorry.
Chris, anything from you?
Yeah, this will be my last question, Andrew, and thank you for coming on. You know, this was a really fun interview and one of my favorites so far with the show. What do you think Lars Eller's role is with this Habs team? I mean, I know you've written a lot, and he gets a lot of hate with the Habs Twitter and Habs social media. Like, it's crazy the amount of hate he gets. I'm a fan of Lars. People want him to be that number one center, which he will never be. Can you give us a little thought of what you think Lars Eller is and what he does for this team?
I think, logically, Lars Eller is the eventual Thomas Plekanec replacement, and that's, you know, the second line center who plays fairly defensive minutes, but that relies on Alex Galchenyuk moving to center, you know, and if Alex Galchenyuk is going to stay on the wing, then honestly, the Canadians are kind of screwed because they're not going to be able to acquire a first line center. None are really available. And, you know, you talk to Mark Bergevin and he'll say the same thing, that he can only get one on PlayStation, was his famous quote this year at the end of the year press conference. I think that eventually, as much as I like Thomas Plekanec, both him and David Desharnais are guys that they have to move on from in essentially the next year. Both of them are getting older. Both of them are declining in certain ways, Plekanec defensively, Desharnais offensively. It just doesn't make sense to hold on to those guys. You know, you can't have emotional attachments like that. And Lars Eller deserves a shot. He's played something like 100 minutes with Pacioretty in 4 years. It's crazy. And when you look at what they've done together, they're unbelievably good together. And they start in the defensive zone like 85% of the time. They're incredible. But they never get to play together. The most they've played together was actually on the penalty kill. They were a unit together for a year, and they scored something like 5 shorthanded goals together. So, I don't know. I'd like to see him with Pacioretty just for a bit and see what happens, because I think that as much as Lars Eller is a great defensive player, his offense has been hidden because he never gets good line mates.
Last question for me, Andrew, and again, thank you for coming on the show. I'd love to talk more about analytics in the future. But my last question, I always like asking people who follow the Montreal Canadiens this one. There seems to be such an emphasis on a French coach or a French general manager. And with Michel Therrien's job somewhat in jeopardy, it seems, for next season, a lot of people are saying, well, who would you replace him with? And the only idea is other French guys. Do you think that now, because we live in an era where everything is translated and every tweet gets sent twice in English and French and everything of that sort, do you think now is the time where the Montreal Canadiens could hire an English coach and it wouldn't be the big deal it was in, say, 1967 or 1977 or 1987?
I mean, it depends. If you're going to hire an English coach, he has to be the best coach. If they would have hired Mike Babcock, I honestly don't think you would have seen anyone in Quebec be like, oh, we can't hire this guy. However, even if they hire an English coach, he has to learn French. It's just the way it goes. And, you know, a lot of people think it's just, you know, Quebec politics and this and that, and it's not rational, but I'll explain it to you in the best way that I know possible. The Montreal Canadiens are one of the oldest and by far the most important corporation in Quebec. They're a cultural institution. They are, you know, a representation of the people. It's almost like a religious thing. And the coach is the guy that talks to the media every day. He's the face of the franchise. He's the face of the corporation. He has to be able to communicate in the native language of the people here. It's unavoidable. He has to be able to. And I know that people freaked out when Randy Cunningworth was named interim head coach, but I feel like as much as that was about him being English, I think it was more about him being Randy Cunningworth. You know, he wasn't anything special. And maybe he could have learned French if they gave him more time, but he wasn't well prepared either. I mean, he didn't even say bonjour at his first press conference. It was bad. But honestly, it makes so much more sense have a French coach in Montreal. It just has to happen.
Awesome. That was a great answer. Thank you for your honesty. Andrew Berkshire, the managing editor and social media coordinator of SportLogic, and formerly the head honcho at Eyes on the Prize, Montreal Canadiens chapter of SB Nation. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. We do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. That is Mr. Berkshire. All right, now back to Lou Lamoriello. Because Chris, I still have no words. Like I can't after just talking about analytics, I can't quantify what just happened. Like, just you talk, because I gotta think for a sec. So say some words, because I'm still in this state of shock here on the Hockey Guys podcast, brought to you by Just Dish and Hockey.
You know, I think that we see a dream team of sorts with this management group. I don't think that means that this team is going to be amazing next year. But if I told you last year that Kyle Dubas, Hunter, Shanahan, Babcock, Lamoriello were all in one group of management, I guarantee you would be surprised. I guarantee anyone would be surprised. And it really does give instant credibility to the team. I mean, you put Babcock on this team, that gave insanely credibility to this team. This team, you know, it's gotten so much more love. People are more into the sport in Toronto. You know, it's crazy. The Twitter is crazy with Toronto fans again. Where even if they don't have a playoff year, people are going to be happy because they have the best coach in the world and they have some great prospects coming up. Now you add in Lou Lamoriello, who, yeah, you know what? We'll see what he does. He's done some bad things with the New Jersey Devils, and he's done some amazing things with the New Jersey Devils. He's not going to have that same role he had with New Jersey, where it was him versus everyone, and like it was just him doing everything. No, this is going to be a team play, you know? It's going to be Kyle Dubas. It's going to be Hunter. It's going to be Shanahan. It's going to be Lamoriello in one room just putting out ideas. And to be honest, I think Shanahan's smart enough to know what to do with his management. I think he said, you know what, we'll have good chemistry. Everyone will have good chemistry. We can all make this one deal. You know, it's kind of like four to five general managers in one team. And that's not bad. I mean, if you can have great chemistry between your management, you're going to have a great team. That's really my thought on it. And I think we've seen that, you know, if you have good assistant general managers, if you put your players, if you put your staff in a great role, you know, if you put your pros and you have your pros playing as pros, you have your AHLers playing as AHLers, you have your scouts doing what they have to do, then you're going to have a good team. That's what we've seen in Detroit. That's what they've done in the last 30 years. That's why they're that best team, the most consistent team in the NHL. And that's what Toronto's trying to become. They are really trying to become that Detroit Red Wings. And Lou Lamoriello.
Lou Lamoriello is 73 years old. Like, Lou Lamoriello, he is so old. Like, he drafted Brendan Shanahan before Kyle Dubas was born. I mean, like,
that's why this. Yeah, but that's what. That's why I think that it's going to be a figurehead. I think this is a couple-year thing, and they're going to give Kyle Dubas the reins of the horse. He's going to take it in a couple years. And you know what? I really do think, you know, Shanahan wanted Lou to be that teacher.
It seems like
That's old.
Oh, he's very old. Well, the fact that they made this move, it just adds to an already incredible offseason for the Leafs. I mean, like even if you, like, I guess I've been thinking about this as we've been recording the show, but Lamoriello, like, he does bring experience. I hate when the media says that, and I always thought that narrative of this Leafs front office lacking experience, I thought people held their hat on that too much. And it's funny, too, like, when we were talking about how, like, no leaks get through this team, like, this front office, every move that they've made has seemingly come out of left field, including this one. And there is no one in the sport of hockey who locks down his internal moves or what's going on within the organization more than Lou Lamoriello. So the more I'm thinking about this, I think this is a move where obviously he's not going to be in the same position as he was in New Jersey. He's not going to be pulling all the strings. I don't even think he could pull the trigger on a trade without the approval of four or five other guys. But what I think is, if this is a committee general manager structure where he may be the title GM, but in the real reality, it's the five or six guys around a table making decisions, I like that Lou Lamoriello's there. I like that he has a voice there. Because, you know, we talked about Mike Babcock being a gold medal winning Stanley Cup champion. Lou Lamoriello has three cups. Lou Lamoriello has one of the greatest expansion teams in the history of hockey. I mean, he brought to New Jersey a system which the entire sport now plays in the trap. You can't, like, despite the fact that his team hasn't made the playoffs, I forget the number and don't quote me, but it's like, I think I saw it on Twitter, it's like seven or eight times the Devils haven't gotten out of the first round in the playoffs in like the last 8 years. And the one time was that ridiculous playoff run they had where they lost against LA. And you can argue his modern results, that's fair. But when you look at the grand scope of it, like, Lou Lamoriello is one of the most successful names in hockey. Like, he is hockey. Like, there is no more old school guy than Lou Lamoriello. So, you know, the more I think about this move, actually, this is a really good move on the Leafs' behalf. I was a little skeptical at first because he really is the utter counter to everything they've done this offseason. But if he can come in now and at least evolve a little bit, where he can at least somewhat modernize his thinking and now work with a management structure that, man, Dubas, Hunter, Shanny, and Lamoriello, I mean, like, oh my God, you better be excited up in the six. If you're in the six right now, you should get excited because the Toronto Maple Leafs, man, they've had a heck of an offseason. I really can't gloss. I can't gloss over how good this has been. Like, this is a smart move. And now I'd rather have him than go against him. And like I said, even if he doesn't pull the trigger on trades, even if he's not the guy calling teams to see about moves, to have him in your corner, or hell, just to have him at the table. I read a tweet somewhere where, like, Lou Lamoriello could sit at the he could sit at a negotiating table and not say a word. He just has to stare at the other side. And the other side is going to have the you-know-what scared out of him. I mean, like, I don't know. We've got a few minutes left in the show. I thought we had a pretty good show today, actually, Chris. Mr. Berkshire was a heck of a guest.
And some breaking news. Like, I mean, it was kind of crazy how that went. I'm excited to go listen back to that breaking news. I guarantee that it'll be an exciting... It got my heart racing. I'm not even a Leafs fan. That was crazy how I read that. And it's just a crazy thing how this all generated in one day in the dog days of summer. Something finally happened the day we have our show on. So it's great.
I know. And yeah. I remember before the show, I was like, oh, I don't want to talk about Vegas and Quebec City for 20 minutes.
I know. Yeah, it's overkilled.
And you'll go back on the tape too, like the way you say Maple Leafs hire Lou Lamoriello as general manager, I was giggling to myself like, oh my, yeah, whatever, okay. And then when I went on Twitter, all I saw was like the thing where you can retweet it and then have your own separate tweet. And it was just people like tweeting the news and just putting like what dot 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 or dot dot dot. Like it floored everybody.
It's going to be interesting how this goes and what happens. And I'm excited. I think the press conference is today at 2, or I think I saw that. Maybe it's not. But I'm interested to see what happens and what Shanahan says and what Lou Lamoriello's actual role is with this team. And I really do think that he'll come out and say, or Shanahan will come out and say, it's going to be a team thing. It's not Lou and then everyone else. It's everyone else together, and everyone's working together. And I think that's what really Toronto has been since they've had this new identity. But yeah, it's great news, and like this really does change the whole dog days of summer. And you know, we got the arbitration cases happening right now, which it'll be interesting to see some of these players in those cases. We've got Lou Lamoriello. You know, we'll for sure see a couple trades come down between now and the beginning of camp. So you know, it's we're in the middle of dog days, but you know, the nice positive thing is there's 76 days until opening day.
Oh, we're so close. We're so close. As the music plays. What do you think of the new hour format, by the way? Like, we're an hour show. We're a big deal now.
I know. And we have a sponsor. I mean, this is the greatest thing ever, you know? We can talk to our guests as long as we want. And, you know, lots of stuff is coming in the new year for the Hockey Guys podcast.
Absolutely. Anyway, my name is Hunter Crowther. It's my co-host, Chris Shannon. Thanks to our guest, Andrew Berkshire, today for coming on the show. And thank you to Lou Lamoriello for making this Thursday morning just a little bit more exciting. Thanks for listening to the Hockey Guys podcast. We're hoping to have another show again in the near future. And check out the hockeyguys.net for more exclusive coverage. And also check out Just Dish and Hockey. Got some great stuff. There's sunglasses, man. I'm not kidding. I want a pair of those sunglasses. I'm not joking around. Anyway, take it easy, folks.